Kurdistanians, Proops Vandervilts, Proops Titans, Proops Predators, Proops Davy Crockett's, and Proops Diluvians. Hail and well met here in Tennessee at Zany's here in Nashville, Music City, USA. The prettiest state in the land of the free. Once again, the vodcast hits the smartest man in the world takes to the ether. This is where the kittens hit the road, where the real and the delusional join flippers and swim for their very surreal lives. The downtrodden get a hand up, and the evil greed pigs and hate mongers who run the dance have to take one for the team. Their ivory tower is only there for our target practice. I love dope, baseball, music, old movies, and the chance to rant and rave in front of you. As Marvin Gaye said, let's get it on. I've never been to Tennessee before. I've been to the Memphis airport a couple of times. I have an Elvis Presley magnet on my refrigerator from 1989 that my friend, awesomely, it's the Elvis pose where he's got his arms thrown out and he's in the cape and the giant black shades and he's just slightly overweight. And my friend wrote below it, "Know thyself, the king." But I know nothing about Nashville, which has me at a distinct disadvantage with all y'all. I may be asking you tonight to fill me in on certain various elements of your fine municipality. Of course, the legend of Nashville reigns supreme. I couldn't be more excited to be here. And yes, I am going to go to the Grand Ole Opry and take pictures. And yeah, I am a white person after all. And as my friend Sean Murphy once said, this is the remnants of the land bridge that once connected Scotland to Arkansas. And this is our white people heritage here in Nashville, and I'm pretty happy about it. I understand there's some statues in the Musica roundabout that are perplexing to the people of Nashville, in so much as female pudenda is showed, which is, of course, always cool, as we know, unless it's the Super Bowl. Apparently, it was the male member in flagrante that really set this town on its ear. Evidently, the male appendage is not something for public display here, and I couldn't concur more, except remember, it's a statue. It's not going to come at you at any point. I was also informed, this I did not learn from direct hard experience, if you'll pardon the expression, but this one light here is flickering like a ferret on a fucking meth binge here. There's an insane inflammatory, can we kill the white one that's right over the stage? I realize there are those of you listening in podcast land with your earbuds on now, you're like, really, this is how the show's gonna start? We were hoping for smooth comedy and jokes all the way, it just went up. Can that one come out entirely, Mr. Nate? Nope. What? Really? Can it even go down a little? Perhaps. I know you can't see me, dear Proopcast listeners, but if you could see me right now, I look kind of like a French fry in one of those waiting areas under a very hot light indeed. And as you know, my body temperature runs quite high. I have a body temperature of a feral pig, so I sweat in the shower. It's always on. I like AC on, alcoholic stun turbo death is what I put. If there's a setting for that in my room, that's what I put it on. I put it on icebox. But I haven't been to an actual strip club here. I'm led to understand there's many honky-tonks here, which my understanding, of course, in the history of country music, because your woman has done left you and your truck will not start, you gots to go to the honky-tonk all night long. As well as the honky-tonks here, I understand there are certain gentlemen's clubs where women dance for men's entertainment. And unlike other places, apparently you must stay 3 feet away, or the strippers have to stay 3 feet away from the participants. Which precludes a lap dance, except in my case. They didn't call me the yardstick in high school for nothing, ladies and gentlemen. Thin and bendy, okay? With little hash marks all the way down. Well, it's not 3 feet, but if I do my yogi trick, I think I can make it happen. It'll feel like 3 feet. Let me put it that way. Let's get to what's what. This is all about Davy Jones tonight from the Monkees. I know that there's a lot of young people here, and you may not remember the Monkees. We had a previous question on the Proopcast that addressed me and said, how come all the halcyon music of your youth is the music that you like the goodest? And my answer was that everything that I liked between the ages of 6 and 9 that was on television is something that I've loved forever. Not everything, but the things I did like. Batman, The Avengers, The Addams Family, Star Trek, right? And then The Monkees were on at the same time. And they were so unbelievably awesome. I remember there was a primetime TV show the night before the first Monkees episode aired of the Monkees goofing around and like driving up and down Sunset Boulevard in the Monkey Mobile and whatnot. And then the next day I got up promptly and watched the first fucking episode and was like, this is the best show ever. Now, you know nothing of jump cutting or any kind of surreal activities or that weird. If you've ever seen the Monkees TV show, it's completely off the deep end. It's a mixture of vaudeville and pop, right? Davey sees every episode, Peter would see a girl and his eyes would go, and there'd be like weird spirals in them and shit. And I don't know, I'm not doing the Monkees show very much justice, but it was fucking rocking good news. It was, thank you very much. One other person my age, everyone else. Who are these Monkees you speak of? Were they like the Beatles that your generation so enjoyed? Whatever, you little bitches. One day you'll be talking about The Party or whatever, or some fucking nonsense you liked when you were young on your fucking podcast, and you'll have a group of insolent youth staring back at you like a fucking koi pond with no comprehension. So there was Peter, and he was the surf dude, and there was Mickey, and he had all the personality and sang a lot of the jams, and there was Michael, and he was the introspective one who wore a woolen watch cap and was sullen. And then there was Davey. He was the TV's Paul McCartney, right? He was peppy and lovable. He was 5'2", and I believe Mickey described him on the show as the short little English one. And Davey was really cool, and Davey sang a lot of the songs, too. He sang, I wanna be free, like the chipmunk roaming side. Those weren't the words. I don't remember the fucking words. Sadly, the Monkees didn't have as many chipmunk lyrics as they ought to have. When they started, everybody jammed on them and said, oh no, you don't play your own instruments, you're a put-together TV band, the Prefab Four and all that. But by the end, of course, they had learned to play all their instruments and were on tour together. Jimi Hendrix opened for them on one tour, which is an astounding moment in American musical history. The idea that a room full of 12-year-old girls who've come to see the Monkees and Hendrix gets on is like, come on, suck it to me one more time. Right, and they were like, ooh, this is bad. You know, Mom, I don't... My sister had a poster on the wall that had the Monkees, and it was a bunch of monkeys climbing up the name The Monkees, right? And then it said, with Jimi Hendrix and the Chocolate Watch Band. And, see, I'm not that fucking old, so fuck you. I was but a child. But I had the album from the TV show, so Davey was really cool, and he did this dance. I have to get up and do it. It's really...
Yes!
Kind of a shuffle side to side Davy Jones dance, right, with the tight bell bottoms and a little hat sometimes. And on the back of the album, it said their instruments and what they did, right? So it said, like, instruments, Michael, guitar and vocals. And Davy, it said, tambourine and vocals. Because the tambourine is a very intricate instrument. Because it has to play both with the beat and against the beat sometimes. And you can either play it with your hand or your hip, as you know. And if shit gets out of control, possibly over your head. I only wish I had a tambourine with me right now. So you could see my inconceivable lack of rhythm, which is perfect for a white person in Tennessee. If you're talking about country music, you're talking about people who dance embarrassingly. That's all I have to say. So, I met Davey a couple of times, and I got to talk to him and everything, and I'm not sharing that with you, because fuck you, that was my experience. But here's the deal. I did the weirdest fucking gig in the world with Davy Jones, and I can't even... Okay, so a woman called me like 7, 8 years ago and goes, you want to go to Barbados? I'm like, oh, sure. As you do, right? When someone calls and goes, do you want to go to opening line? How'd you like to go to Barbados for free? A free trip to Barbados. Perfect. Where is it? It's at the very end of the Caribbean, right? It's above Venezuela. It's way the fuck down. Let me put it this way. You go to Jamaica and you wait for 3 hours and then you take another plane for 3 hours and then you're in Barbados, right? The Concorde used to go there, which is a supersonic plane that used to fly across from London. It made 3 stops in the States, right? Washington and New York and Barbados. Because so many rich English messed up fucking maniac, out of control, alcoholic, drug addicts, golf enthusiasts would take it directly to Barbados. Now people, of course, on private planes and whatnot. But in any case, so I go, yeah, I'd love to go. I go, what is it? It's like this travel agents, and they're having their year-end special show, and they're having all these people come in and entertain and give out the awards. It's an award show for travel agents and hotels. I'm like, I didn't listen very closely. All I heard was Barbados, right? And I pictured myself, my man breasts glinting in the sun, slathered with tropical breeze, tanning oil, and my wife, you know, recumbent upon a pineapple and whatnot. I don't know what, there are no pineapples, by the way, in the Caribbean, so that was a hoax. But in any case, you can imagine, right? So I said, yes, let's go. And the people who put it on were these English guys who were inconceivably dodgy. Let me put it that way. To use the English word, they were well fucking dodgy. I think the other English word that's often used by English criminals is villains. They were on the borderline of being villains. Let's put it that way. I don't mean they were wearing a cloak and a fucking top hat and they were dressed like Jack the Ripper and shit, but they were fucking villains. And so we gets down to Barbados, and it's a whole bunch of fucking insane acts, right? Like a bunch of people from TV, the ladies of the Supremes. Are you following this? Not the Supremes, because that would be Mary Wilson, Cindy Wright, blah, 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 Florence, who passed away, and then Diana Ross. None of them are there, but the women who went out with Diana Ross when Diana Ross fired Cindy and Mary when she went out, they're there with their 27-year-old Jewish manager. And they wore fur coats to the Caribbean. And that, yes, that's all I have to say about that. They were, it was on, is all I have to say. We stayed at a very strange hotel. So I goes to the rehearsal for this thing, and they've hired Barbadians are called Bajans. They hired a local band, right, to play this award show. So they have an orchestra, about a 15-piece band, and they knew 2 songs, YMCA and Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Which they played intermittently. I don't know how to describe to you. I believe it was Michael Caine, is it the Ipcress file, when he's watching the band and he says, let me know who wins. That's how they played songs, right? Bam, bam. Oh no, that's why I'm saying pew, pew, pew. Yeah, so that's all they knew. There was some soap opera stars there, all these people. And so we go to the sound check, and the band hammers through fucking Don't Cry For Me and YMCA 1,000 times. We do the thing. We come back on the night, and Davey is there. He's adorable, right? He was riding horses in Pennsylvania at the time, right? He was quite tiny. He was a jockey when he was a teenager. And awesomely, Davey Jones played the Artful Dodger in the West End in London and on Broadway, right? And on the very first night the Beatles debuted in 64, the fucking cast of Oliver also was on the Ed Sullivan Show that night. And if you go on YouTube, you can see 17-year-old Davy Jones with the fucking silk hat and the fingerless gloves going, consider yourself whirlwind, right? Doing fucking West End musical, man. He was a musical. He said he met the Beatles and they played cards and shit. So in any case, Davy got up and he sang Daydream Believer and I'm a Believer. He sang every song the Monkees did with the word Believer in it. It was a Believer medley. So everyone there either runs a hotel or is at a hotel, except for us, right? The people they've shipped in from the States who they've all bamboozled because they gave you a free trip to Barbados for 5 days. So we're drunk because there's rum fucking everywhere, like flowing, like the Cumberland River, like in a torrent, just a fucking rum, a bottle of rum for every 2 people at the table, right? Because it's Barbados, and what else do they have? Well, weed, but here's the point. So My wife is at a table with all the people from our hotel, right? And all the other Hollywood people are sitting back at another table, being very glum indeed. And we're with an insane group of people from our hotel. There's a guy there who's come from England. His girlfriend was put in the hospital the day he was to leave. He left her in the hospital, flew to Barbados, and was nailing this girl at our hotel. So my wife's sitting with him, and they're just drunk, right? And there's two people at the table who own a hotel in Brazil that's a surgical spa. What's a surgical spa, Greg? Well, let me explain the dealings of the very rich and bizarre to you. Rich people, when they want to look like a cat or an armadillo, they fly to other countries and they have their face removed and replaced with another one, often in a tropical location. I don't know if you knew this, but they do. And they go to places like this. And by the way, I asked her, where is your spa in Brazil? And she, you know, with a beautiful, lovely Brazilian accent, I can't do it. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. Because Portuguese is so sexy, right? They could say anything. They could be telling you to fuck off or whatever, and you'd be like, So it was out in the jungle some fucking place. It seemed like a trip to get to. In any case, the mother is there and the daughter. They both run the surgical spa. The mother's face is unrecognizable as a human anymore. She looks like, I don't even know how to describe it. You know, like, not quite a Morlock from fucking The Time Machine. More like Catherine Hellman in Brazil, if anybody remembers the, you know. As if she was walking into an extraordinarily stiff wind and her face was made of molding modeling clay and the clay was being pushed backwards at a very brisk rate, right? So her eyebrows were way up here and heaven knows that why she didn't have a beard. So the daughter, slightly less surgerized, and my wife's at the table with them, and the mother goes, I can't find my camera. And she doesn't speak a word of English. I don't know how you ask a Brazilian, right? They speak in bossa nova, is my understanding. Bow, 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 right? Is this samba? Right? I don't know what she said. In any case, the daughter goes, where is the camera? And we can't find the camera. A search is mounted. Everyone up at the table. Everyone's standing up at their chairs looking under the goddamn table. 15 fucking minutes go by. Finally, the mother goes, oh, and reaches under and pulls it out of her ass. And it's a giant fucking camera. She's been sitting on it with no knowledge. And the English guy, the Hooray Henry type, goes, they have no feeling under the... They have no feeling below their waists. I think all the nerve endings were damaged at that point. Yeah. I want to reach the point where I'm numb in certain extremities. The woman who wrote The Valley of the Dolls, Jacqueline Suzanne, said in her biography that she used to take Nembutal suppositories and that the reason why she loved him was you fell asleep feet first. That's Liza Minnelli drug taking, you know what I'm saying? When it'll go in any orifice as long as it fucking works, right? You put these in your eyeball, fine. When do we start? And can we have champagne? It's been a week since the Oscars. I know they're so important in Tennessee. Not since Gwyneth sang her song from Country Strong have you been so excited, I'm sure. How long was Gwyneth here in Nashville when she shot the movie? Yeah? No one. I'm never going to get an answer from you fucking people. Again, like everywhere I ever ask a question, half the people went yeah, and half the people went no, and half the people went, what are you fucking talking about? Gwyneth, who did what fucking movie? She sang at the Oscars last year. This year she did some comedy with Robert Downey Jr. And what I love about her, of course, is that she wants to be one of us. She wants to be human. She does. She's like Pinocchio. You know what I mean? When you're made by a Geppetto and you're formed and they put the silver spoon in your mouth and everything just comes to you and you're married to an English rock band and you're wicked thin and you're macrobiotic and you go on purges and tell everyone about it and shit like that and you have children named Oatmeal and, you know, and Game Boy and whatnot, that It's important to be one of us. You know, people who have washed clothes and looked at shit and picked up stuff off the floor. She is, after all, a mom, or because she lives in England, she's a mum. And in any case, this year she did comedy. So Robert Downey came out, and I don't know if you saw it. Robert Downey came out, and he, first of all, before he went on, he T-bowed, which was hilarious. And then he ran on with a crew, and she goes, "What are you doing?" And he goes, I'm making a movie called The Presenter, right? It's a documentary. And so that was funny, but Gwyneth read her line like this: "Robert, what are you doing?" I don't know if you remember the acting contestants on Star Search, when Star Search used to have acting back in the 80s, but that's what the acting was like. Robert, you should not be doing this during the Oscar Academy Awards program-y. Like, can't you be yourself? And then I thought, she is being herself. This is what you get. Imagine being a waitress. That's all I have to say. That has to serve her, I mean. I don't mean just imagine being one. Put it in context. Stick with me, Nashville. Let's go. So Angelina Jolie came out, and I'm sure we all saw that, at least on the interweb. She came out, and she was, you know, she was her usual hot, semi-plasticized, right? I mean, I love the Morticia goth. I travel around the world. I have a Cambodian tattoo that has this epic poem on it that I don't know how to read. And I have children from every nation. I have, you know, the United Colors of Benetton, and I'm with Brad Pitt, and I fly to places and give millions of dollars. I dig her fucking St. Angie stick. Thank you, buddy. One person in the back is laughing. Everyone else is just looking at me like I'm an asshole or something. All I'm saying is I dig what she does, because there's charity at the end of the day. I went back on YouTube and watched her Oscar acceptance speech when she was Best Supporting Actress in Squirrel Interrupted. And if you remember what she was wearing that night, she had deep black hair, a completely white face, and she was dressed as if she was one of the roadies for Susie and the Banshees, right? And she gets up on stage, and they give her the Oscar, and she goes, "I am so in love with my brother right now." That was the first thing she said. And the whole crowd just went, this is a room full of coked up libertines. Imagine who's at an Oscar show. People who have sex with hookers while they're on the phone. These are Hollywood types. They do coke in the morning and then lie about it. They do heroin and then check the sell-by date on the cottage cheese at the health food store so nothing bad goes in their body. That's who's in the audience. But when Morticia Adams fucking got up on stage and went, "I am so in love with my brother right now," everybody's like, "Oh, wow, wow, wow. Wow, don't be in love with him. You can like him, you can even like him like him. You can love him, but don't be in love." And then it was awesome. So this year she came out to present an award. And again, Angie, and I call her Angie because I don't know her at all. I presume familiarity. Davey I met, I can call him Davey. He was never David to me. But Angie, what a douchebag. Angie Leany, Angelini Jolini, and her spaghettini got up there, and she stood there, and then boom, the leg came out. But it wasn't like she didn't, like, I remember sexy stars, because I'm old. Stars used to oodle up on stage, right, at the award show, and like get their shit out and go like, and that's how you do it, right? You know, Rita Hayworth style. You ooze up on stage, or if you're a dude, you just power up. They're like, Clint Eastwood used to walk up on stage at the Oscars and go, "Hello." And that was it, man. Everybody like, "Oh no, really? Oh no," you know. Even Charlton Heston in the old days, "Good evening." You know, it was sexy. And all the 70s stars, you know, Raquel Welch and Diane Cannon and fucking Jane Fonda or whatever. Well, Angelina get up there and she said, this is what's happened to show business. It's such a striated corporate fucking, you can smell the meeting when you watch the fucking movie. That she walked up on stage and went, "Here is the sex. Now there is sex in the show." And then, "The art of whatever is the art of," and then her arms started moving, and you kind of looked at her arms and went, "Oh my God, fucking horrible thalidomide, fucking post-Nagasaki fucking flipper baby, horrible sideshow, heinous fucking boop, 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 boop. Look at the actress with the sexy legs and the chicken arms. Step right up, step right up. two thin quarters is all it costs. You can see her talk and walk and dance. She'll be in the movie Salt doing a horrible Russian accent. She'll be in the movie Alexander doing a horrible Macedonian accent. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. The chicken arms won't last forever. They're shriveling as we speak. The legs of a sex machine, the arms of a shrimp. It was pretty freaky. It was a bit calculated for me. I'm sorry, what were you saying? Am I not going fast enough and providing enough comedy? It's turned into a stand-up show all of a sudden. What did you say, my brother? Oh, no. Okay, nothing. Fuck it. All right. We won't cut that out, by the way. That's going out to the world. I want you to know, Nashville, I gave you the chance to represent, and you fucking went quiet on me after you yelled shit out. It was a bit clinical for me. That's all I have to say. Either come out and ooze out there like Cameron Diaz and J-Lo did the butt shot and whatnot. I thought that was cute because Cameron Diaz and J-Lo are two people whose butts are precious commodities. Their butts are like the fucking Grand Canyon or, you know, the Niagara Falls or something, a natural wonder. But when Angie came out there and all of a sudden, kaboom, here it is, I was like, I need to be heated up. You have to tell me I'm pretty and rub me and stuff. I'm not ready to go in like Brad Pitt. I don't know if this is foreplay at your house. I'm Mrs. Smith, kaboom. Mr. Smith, take out your weapon and begin the program. I don't know how she does it at her house, but it's different in my house. There's wine and candles and I cover myself in Jell-O and I have a, you know, but I'm just saying. I know they don't have time for Jell-O on the Oscar program, but I mean, don't just fucking take your leg out and then like, what, I have to go now? It's a lot of pressure, I'm a man. Not like a woman, I'm not ready anywhere. So I'm fixing to go to the Grand Ole Opry. I have no Southern credentials, really. My mother's from Casilla, Mississippi. I'm not from Mississippi. I didn't grow up in Mississippi. I didn't go to school. Well, nobody goes to school in Mississippi. Yeah, that was just a cheap shot on Mississippi. They're lovely. Awesome fried food. Yeah, someone just went, yeah, fuck them. Wow. Where's that tea for Texas, tea for Tennessee spirit I'd come to expect? It's dead, Greg. Greg, it's dead. It's dead. And other polysyllabic words that were formerly one-syllable words, like tire. Tire's a two-syllable word, Greg. Don't correct yourself in front of the Nashvillians. This is Cashville. Stand tall, baby. May I have another vodka if anyone of the staff is still speaking to me? I was told that sometimes vodkas aren't delivered to the stage here, and you can imagine how I felt. My entire life passed before my eyes backstage. All I saw was a montage, and the song Smoke It. What is it? Stroke It by Billy Squire was playing. Everybody! And it's my whole life. There I am on a bicycle. There I am with a cowboy hat on. There I am in high school smoking my first joint. And then, oh! Thank you, my precious love. Thank you so much. All right. The precious gift of vodka, ladies and gentlemen. I know that Easter's coming soon, and as you know, Easter's the time of the resurrection. And if there's one thing the apostles all agreed on, James, Philip, Mark, Tom, Simon. Sleepy, dopey, cheerful. Peppy. Consuela. One thing all of the disciples agreed on was that vodka was the fucking after resurrection drink. He is risen. And then fucking A. He said he would. So I'm going to the Opry, and I just wanted to run through, this is just a list, I have no coherent anything to go with this, but other than, I was just off the top of my head, but you're reading it off a list. Yeah, but I wrote it on the list. I didn't go on the internet and look it up. I was thinking as I was coming here. Hank Williams, right? Hank Williams used to, yeah. They tried to bar him, didn't they, from the Opry? And he was so fucking popular, he showed up anyway, right? It just fucking speeded up and fucking... If I had Hank Williams' physique, that's all I could wish for in this life. I'd like to weigh 89 pounds, you know what I mean? And have a guitar and just, oh, fuck, was he cool.
Junior, right?
Yeah, well, Junior as well. No, I'm talking about Senior. Senior played the Opry, right? Junior plays it too, I presume. And the third as well, I assume. No? Okay, someone went Junior, right? Junior and I have some differences, but I still love him. They asked me, Hank, why do you drink? Why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out those songs that you wrote? He was fucking cool. If I get stoned and podcast all night long, it's a Proopcast tradition. When I was little, there was a show called Hee Haw on TV. And Grandpa Jones, right, played at the Opry in the olden times, in the antediluvian times, when it was at its old location, when it was underwater. And Minnie Pearl, Ferlin Husky, Hank Snow, Roy Acuff, Ernest Tubb, Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, Tammy Wynette, Skeeter Davis, Porter Wagoner, Dolly Parton, Ray Price, Don Wilson, Eddie Arnold, Chet Atkins, Conway Twitty. Fucking Johnny Cash, man. Who else?
String Bean.
String Bean, fucking A. String Bean, I forgot about String Bean, man. And he played the banjo and shit. Thank you, I got that. And speaking of Chet Atkins, Roy Clark, the Nashville Brass, Vince Gill, Dixie Chicks, Kenny Rogers, those were just off the top of my head. I know there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of others, right? And because it's Black History Month, Greg, it's March. Yeah, but it's a leap year, and Black History Month went an extra day this year. So I'm extending it another day because we's in Tennessee. And who was that awesome rap group that did Tennessee? Arrested Development, yeah. Was it Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic song. I wanted to talk about another country singer who played the Opry, and I think was the first black guy to play the Opry, Charlie Pride. Now, this is what gets me to Charlie Pride. He's born in Mississippi, but this is what I didn't know about Charlie Pride. And the reason I bring it up is when I was at the Memphis airport today, I was eating... Charlie Pride. I was eating... Thank you. Can I get a witness? I forgot we're in the South and white people act like black people at the movies here. It's cool. That's cool. I'm down. Charlie Pride. Watch out behind you, Luke! There's stormtrooper behind you, Luke! Yes, we all see the stormtrooper. Charlie Pride, of course, amazing career. One of the top 15 best-selling artists of all time for 25 years. 36 country number ones. 25 million albums. 31 gold, 4 platinum, 1 quadruple, a Grand Ole Opry inductee, 93, Country Music Hall of Fame, 2000. And this is where we're going with this. Negro Leagues Baseball Museum board member. Charlie Pride. Charlie Pride wanted to be a ball player more than he wanted to be a country singer. He played, he had a pretty good little curve, according to this article here, and this is from the Negro League information website. He played for the Memphis Red Sox right here in Tennessee, and the Birmingham Black Barons, where my idol Willie Mays played, and Willie Mays' dad before him, in fact, in the same outfield at one point, I think. No, maybe not on the Barons, but in any case, Willie did play during the early 50s. He was discovered when he played for a Sandlot team against the Memphis Red Sox. His first shot, he failed to stick, blah, blah, blah. At that time, the Negro American League. Now, mind you, this biography, and this is what I love about history and biographies, gives his birth date as March 13th, 1938, Sledge, Mississippi, and his first day as a ball player in 1953. Now, I don't do math that well. But 38 to 53 makes him, what, 15 years old? Great leaping fucking catfish. No wonder he didn't stick on his first tryout. He weighed 83 pounds. Whatevs. Let's just say whatevs to that. I'm guessing 38 is more of a guideline than a hard and fast date. Like the Mayan calendar, there's three counts, the long count, the middle count, right, and the current count. So he's on the year 17 Ocelot right now, heading toward the year 15 Obsidian. I'm going to go Mayan calendar on him. He began playing in 55 with the Memphis Red Sox after blah, blah, blah. He wanted to be part of the tiny subsection of talented baseball players who make it in the big leagues. High school dropout when black major leaguers were rare. Now mind, not many teams had black players, even by 55. The Yankees didn't have one. I think they got Elliston Howard right after that. The Boston Red Sox didn't integrate till 59, right? And the Southern teams in those days, because this is when teams were all on the East Coast, were St. Louis. That was the South in the major leagues. Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And St. Louis and Philly were the roughest on the black players in those days. In any case, this is my favorite part of the description. A combination of talent drive, slick talk, and hard work. He nearly made it. He only gave up after following a last-ditch. So he played in the Negro Leagues when not many people were going to the Negro Leagues, because by having Jackie and Willie and Henry and Ernie Banks and everybody infiltrate the major leagues, black people stopped going as much to the Negro Leagues. This is my favorite story. He showed up uninvited at the Mets training camp following the team's famously disastrous 62 season, right? They lost 102 games, was it? So he made sure to have a handful of bats with his name emblazoned on them sent to the clubhouse to create the illusion he was a big deal and belonged there, and tried to sneak his way into a tryout before Casey Stengel had him ejected from the team bus. I always thought it was funnier than you guys did. One lady over here is laughing. Everyone else is like, this is the saddest story I've done ever heard. You mean Charlie Pride, my grandfather's idol, was ejected from the Mets team bus after having a bunch of bats emblazoned with his own name on them? It ain't funny, it's tragic, Greg. Your cynical big city ways will not work here, not no more. A team that's lost 100 games and doesn't want to take a look at you. But then again, Stengel was notoriously white. Pride, He joined when his career in the Negro League and minor leagues petered out, he got a job at a smelting plant specifically so he could pitch and hit for the plant's formidable company team. And this is what makes it even more awesome. Never mind Charlie Pride, who's awesome beyond all measure, whose nickname, by the way, was Minnie. He had a brother named Mac Pride, who pitched in the Negro Leagues with some acclaim, and Mac's name was Mac the Knife. And yeah, he played for the Denver team, right? And Denver started having integrated tournaments in 1936, right? Where white teams played against black teams and junk like that. Mac the Knife Pride harbors vivid memories of the Negro Leagues. Pride knew the legendary player coach Buck O'Neill and Hall of Famer Satchel Paige, who taught him a sidearm. He claims that Satchel Paige taught him the sidearm, and that's, of course, our Satchel Paige connection for tonight. Somehow, from the Grand Old Opry, we have got to Satchel Paige. And for that, I thank you, Tennessee. Wow. Wowzer McTavish. We have so many questions that I haven't answered. I was going to do the boring, preachy part, but I think we'll go to questions. And then if all y'all are ready, I think TC has volunteered to take questions from the audience, if that's cool with you guys. Are you up for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Whoa, I've moved my piece of paper. You can see that here's a blank piece of paper. It's old-fashioned here. Use pieces of paper. I could use my phone, Doug Benson style, because I have it on my phone, but I can't see because I'm blind as a fucking bat. Oh, all right, one quick thing before we do the questions. And when you say quick thing, Greg, you mean long ass boring thing? Yeah, I do. The war is raging in Syria right now. When I say the war, I mean the civil war between the people of Syria and the dictator Assad. Now, you've been following it on the news, and there's little comprehension of what's going on. But there's Shia and Shiite and Sunni and Druze and every other manner of tiny interest group in Syria. And he's been bombing and horribly mutilating all the civilians in his country. The rest of the world, of course, standing on the sidelines because, as I've said before, they don't have the oil reserves that we're interested in, and that's why we're not helping them in a humanitarian way. Not like Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan, which has natural gas that we want. In any case, this war reporter was sadly, I wanted to make it a little more, seem a little more real to you. When you watch it on TV and you just see bombs falling on buildings, you kind of like go, I don't even understand what's going on. Here's an English lady who was a war correspondent, and her name was Mary Colvin. And Marie Colvin passed away last week. She was killed in a bombardment in Syria in Homs, which the Assad government's bombing quite massively. The thing that makes Mary Colvin awesome is she had her eye blown out years ago in another incident, and she wore an eye patch all the time, right? She was a badass lady fucking... war correspondent. She was a fearless but never foolhardy war correspondent. In a career spanning 30 years, she covered wars from around the world for the Sunday Times and was renowned for her compassionate, clear writing. She was committed to reporting the realities of war. When was the last time you heard that about someone? Especially the effect on civilians, something no one ever fucking talks about whenever we're having all these awesome wars that we win, like we beat Libya. Woo! Exactly. That was exactly what she was doing in the beleaguered city of Homs at the time of her death. It was after her loss of her eye that she spelled out her reason for covering wars. Humanity and extremists push to the unendurable. My job is to bear witness. I've never been interested in knowing what make of plane had just bombed a village or whether the artillery that fired was 120 millimeters or 155 millimeters. She wrote about people so that others might understand the truth. So she was in Syria, and she was unbelievably badass. And this is what she said right before, on the night of 21 February. The Syrians are not allowing civilians to leave. Anyone who gets hit on the street is hit by a shell. If they're not hit by a shell, they're hit by snipers. There are snipers all around on the high buildings. I think the sickening thing is the complete merciless nature. They're hitting the civilian buildings absolutely mercilessly and without caring, and the scale of it is just shocking. The following morning, this is another reporter reporting on her, I listened for her voice again on BBC Radio's 4, but she was not there. By then, her body was in the rubble of a house that had suffered a direct hit from the Syrian government shell. I know that's sad and horrible, and I just wanted to say it because that's what war is like, and that's what's going on now all around the world and shit. What can I do about it, Greg? Nothing. You have to be zen about it. Other than fucking give your support and love to the people of Syria and hope that Assad fucking resigns his post there and shit like that. But understand that when we bomb places, that's what happens to people. People die who are moms and dads and kids and whatever and stuff like that. It's not just this big glorious thing that happens like that. And as Gil Scott-Heron said, the military and the monetary come together when necessary. They're turning the world into a cemetery. War is not for us so that our lives are better. War is for giant companies that don't pay taxes so their lives are better. In any case, this person said she was the bravest one she ever met. Here it is. I remember trying to say something profound to her about her bravery because she stayed in East Timor in 1999, refusing to leave the UN compound and reporting the terror hourly of the women and children. What about some lunch, she said, brushing it all aside. She was the bravest woman I have ever known. Now, let us go to the questions. If you want to question me, it's smartest@aspecialthing.com. If you want to poke me or query me or prod me in any way. We'll also be at South by Southwest next week in Austin for the Proopcast, and then in Los Angeles on the 7th and Los Angeles again on the 14th at Bar Lubitsch. And then we'll be in London at the Soho Theater, and then Glasgow at the Glasgow Festival, and Paris at La Java. If you want to visit us at any of those places for the live Proopcast there, here's a question. And I don't read these beforehand, but here they are. So here's one. Dear Greg, why baseball? Wow. Well, we've covered a lot of baseball tonight, so Niccolo asks, Niccolo, what an awesome name. I don't know if you're a boy or a girl, but it's an awesome name. Well, I'm a middle-aged white guy. That answers one part of it. Two, my father and I, who had a mixed bag relationship, I think like all men, took me to millions of ball games of all the things he did. He was remiss in some areas, but one thing he did do was take me to see Willie Mays and Willie McCovey and Henry Aaron and all the heroes of my youth, Pete Rose and whatnot. And I just started digging it when I was little. He bought me a pack of bubblegum cards, and they kept them with a... they were baseball cards, and there was this horrible rectangular stick of bubblegum that was completely uneatable, right? Inedible, uncomestible. In order to fucking even get it down, you had to like soften it up in your mouth, and then you'd eat all of them and wad them up and then spit them out, and we'd throw the, and the, so the top card always had, like Ernie Banks had a giant pink triangle on him. Like he was in a concentration camp and was homosexual. He had an enormous pink rectangle over his face. So I started loving him when I was little, and I think it's the lack of the I realize it's the most shit-kicking and rednecky of all the sports outside of NASCAR, because baseball is run by white people and the managers are often guys named Skip and shit like that, and players are named Justin, and they used to chew tobacco and shit like that. It's a little different now. It's more corporate and they drink fucking power shakes and ride bicycles. But when I was little, they chewed tobacco and drank all night and were house drunks, and it was awesome. And of course, in the 70s, black players wore gigantic fros that they had to stuff their fucking helmet down on, like Gary Matthews and Billy Sample and shit like that. So it was really good. And that's why. And also, my heroes are Jackie Robinson and Willie Mays and Satchel Paige. What can I tell you? I love baseball. I mean, I like, you know, hey, there's something to be said for Ty Cobb, too. He was the greatest fucking player of all time. He could run, he could hit, he blew his arm out, but then he could throw a little bit. Also, Ty Cobb batted third. He didn't bat leadoff. I know he stole a million bases, but he batted third and held the bat like this. Split-handled, and then shot his hand down to place the fucking ball. Okay, he was a bit of a sociopath. We all have our issues. Hank Williams likes speed and alcohol. Who doesn't? Judge not, lest ye be fucking skedoodled with shrimp arms. Let St. Angie be the one to flash her thigh and wave the shrimp arm at you who would judge. It's in the Bible. It's in Ecclesiastes 5:13. He who hath the shrimp arm shall not judgeth those whose crustacean arms are more bulky, insomuch as that they take the nutrition of the manna of the land. But that those of you who shall seeth the shrimp arm shall in one way endeavor to try the thing. Thank you, Niccolo. I could go on about baseball until the kittens fucking come home, but we're not gonna tonight because I can sense that we're in Tennessee. And that it's really about football and NASCAR and shit like that. Let's see here. In comparison, oh, that one's too depressing. And we'll move on to that one. No, it's too depressing. Oh, and that's the same questions over. All right, I'll do it. Someone went, come on, in the front row. Michael asks, and Michael, if at all possible, please row your boat ashore. Hallelujah. Thank you. It took a while, but we got there. Dear Purple Rain.
Never would have caused you any feather. I never would have caused you any pain. I only want to see you laughing in the purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain.
Isn't that Prince's most country song? I always thought that was a full-on country song. Yeah. Purple rain, I only want to see you laughing. In comparison, between Fahrenheit 451 and 1984, I told you it was depressing. No, fuck you! Fuck you! I said it was too depressing. My fucking dude here goes, fucking do it anyway! And then, in comparison, not Fahrenheit 451. Jesus Christ, Greg, you just read the fucking thing about the reporter who got shelled. Can't we have some fucking comedy during the Proopcast? In 1984, which book holds more truth and importance in regards to the status of the modern world? Fortunately, I'm singularly equipped to answer this question in a succinct and hilarious manner. Fahrenheit 451 is the book where firemen are in charge of burning books. All books are banned. And so firemen no longer... Easy, Cochise. Easy. I'll handle it from here. Fahrenheit 451. It's the book where the firemen burn books. They don't put out fires. And 1984, of course, we've gone over a zillion times on the fucking Proofcast, right? Exactly. Big Brother's watching you. And so Big Brother and 1984 are just like now, right? Because your phone is watching you, your TV's watching you. Your computer, if it has a little camera on it, that's watching you. But I didn't think about that. Well, fucking think about it. Aren't you paranoid and delusional, Greg? It's not delusional if it's true. It's not paranoid if it manifests in my mind. Which one's more pertinent? It's a tough call. The fireman finds a book and he starts to read the book, and then he goes to his chief in the book, Fahrenheit 451, and goes, I found a book and I've been reading it. And the chief goes, look, take a couple weeks off. He doesn't go, you're fired or there's a fine. He goes, take a couple weeks off. It's happened to all of us. And then you'll come back to burning books, right? So I think both of them combined sort of describe the state we're in right now, where there's a glut of information, but you're being banned from using some of that information. The things they tell you on TV and in the papers and on the interweb are utter and complete fabricated fucking agenda-driven lies. And yet, that's what passes for information in this world. At the same time, your phone is watching you, your fucking computer's watching you. How's my phone watching me? It's a microphone, and it's a camera, and it's a GPS. But Greg, you said this 1,000 times on your show. This is the answer to the question. You said it was going to be funny. I didn't say all of it was going to be funny. I would suggest reading both of them because they're quite easy read. Are you okay? All right. I'll stop asking you. Please keep ejaculating. I'll just carry on. I realize you don't mean anything by it. It's my own fucking ego. So that's the answer. I didn't finish it, but I think that's the answer. Read them both, and you can compare on your own. You know, Ray Bradbury's a humanist, and Orwell's a cynic. So you be the judge of which is the more effective fucking mode of transferring that kind of information about a government. Okay, here's a part of Fahrenheit 451 that I think really, I know. You said you were finished, Greg. We're never really finished. As you know, the podcast is one long show that continues from week to week to fucking week. It's never really over. I believe it was the group Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, who enjoyed no popularity here in Tennessee, who said, welcome back, my friend, to the show that never ends. Wherever you've come in, this is the middle. In Fahrenheit 451, the fireman's wife wants more TVs. In your home, you have giant wall-to-wall TVs, just like we have now, big flat screen ones, except they're the whole wall. And they haven't bought all of them yet, so she only has one wall up. But she wants all four walls. And there's a show on TV every day, an interactive show that you're in along with the people in the show called The Family. And they're a family, and they're arguing, they're doing this, they're doing that. It's a reality TV show, and she's in it too, high on fucking pills all day while the fireman's out burning books. And when he comes home, she's like, when can we get more screens? And that's the part that reminds me of today more than fucking anything. Everybody's like, when can we get more screens? All my friends live inside here now. I've got a friend app that lets me know when my friends are going to be near me and talk to me. Let's take some questions for the crowd. TC, are you in the house at all? Oh, there you are. Kittens McTavish. If anyone has a question, raise your hand and TC will he'll get as far as he can. You might have to come over to him. I hope that's not a hassle. Who here's somebody. This young fellow here. Thanks, TC.
No problem.
And again, I want to thank everyone here at Zany's.
Your name and your question, please.
Whoa, oh, wow, look at you officially hosting and shit. I love it.
First, I would like to say...
What is your name?
Sean Riccio.
Shari?
Sean Riccio.
Oh, hi, Sean. I'm Greg.
Greg. Awe, true to proops.
Hey, what's up?
My question is, what advice would you give for a young comedian who also likes doing jokes about antiquities and science fiction and other things that nobody likes? Because you're one of my heroes, I love you, but I do jokes that are intellectual as well, and I can't get people to laugh at them.
Yeah, well, you've sat through a lot of the Proopcast tonight, and you heard the middle 20 minutes of the show, where there was a veritable Sufi desert of no laughter whatsoever. So now you can see what my career's been like for a lot of the time. No, I would say be true to your school. The only thing you can do is what you do. The advice that I give, advice is, of course, horribly freely given and very poorly accepted a lot of times, I think. TC will tell you, or even Mr. Northern there, there's nothing like stage time. That's the only thing that matters, stage time. Whatever you're talking about on stage will eventually come around to the audience. You're right and they're wrong. I know this is going to seem horrible to you. But this is how comics think. When a comic fails on stage and the set doesn't go well, they don't go, fuck, I really suck tonight. They go, that crowd blew. That's how that fucking works. Oh, yes, Mr. Northern.
Can I put something in there, too?
Yes.
Who was the guy? Who was that, you?
This young man here.
Sir, I'm going to tell you something, man. If it's funny to you, then you have to make a way that it'd be funny to them. I don't know if you saw my shit if I was up here earlier.
Yeah, he did. He was sitting in the front row, man.
This was pre-podcast. I was the fluffer. I was the guy that got everybody all like,
Jim, do you have a website since you're on the mic
yeah,
now?
Yeah, Tim Northern Stand Up, timnorthernstandup.com.
Now, he's a local Nashville comic here, ladies and gentlemen.
I started here locally. But you started locally? But I don't live here anymore.
You don't live here?
No, I live in Valhalla.
Oh,
and, yeah, it's beautiful, man.
You live in Valhalla?
I do, man.
You mean with Odin and Thor?
Yeah,
and
I do,
Frigg,
man. I know
Frigg.
Odin.
Yeah.
I'll put a word in for you, man. I do it
from the mighty halls of Asgard.
I live right down the street from the mighty halls, and it's beautiful, man. I got a little tent, but anyway. But look, man, I'm gonna tell you something, man. If it's funny to you, man, if people believe that you think this is funny, then they'll go with it. That's my advice to you, sir.
What about you, TC?
I guess I may as well give you my advice the same way. You know, it is. It's pretty much, comedy is what comedy is, but everybody loves to laugh. All they need to do, you just got to find the way to make them feel it the way you feel it. That's it. And if you like it, you let it go. And they'll deal with it, like he said, fuck them.
Thank you, gentlemen. That's all I can tell you. Like, it takes a long time to learn your voice and all that jazz, but after a few years, you will, and then you'll come to realize that it's not for the many, it's for the few, and that also it's okay if only 70%. I know anytime I go on stage or even do a podcast, 10% of the crowd is like, this is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I just know it. It's not, I mean, they don't have to say it. There's people sitting out there tonight going like, really? I loved him on Whose Line, but I miss the black guy. I mean, I know that. So, because you don't have any of those expectations, you're free to do whatever you want. Look at it that way. It's a mad fucking panoply of options, and it's an insane bagatelle. You can talk about whatever you like to talk about, but remember this, be funny. In the podcast, I have a little more leeway because all of you all are so fucking generous to me and let me talk about my opinion. This is a different kind of show. A stand-up show, funny every 30 to 45 to 1 minute, right? Don't let it go longer than that. Or maybe every 2 minutes if you're doing a big, long setup or whatever. Right. Now, Mr. Northern works in a very slow classical style, and that's a very difficult style to open with, and that requires a lot of fucking audience attention and shit like that, but you'll eventually get it, and you'll get what you want. Thank you very much for your question. Let's move on to the next one. Thank you. Who's got another one here?
Come tell me a little bit. It won't reach. You're right here, you. Come here.
Yes. Yes, let's have a young lady, shall we?
No, the lady with her hand up. No, right here.
Hi, darling.
Hi, how you doing? Name?
What's your name?
My name is Denise.
Hi, Denise.
I live in the hood, which is like 2 blocks away.
Didn't we meet before the show?
I'm sorry?
Didn't we meet before the show?
Yes, we did. And you remember.
You don't remember? How come I remember?
The regular here said that you didn't sign my CD, which made me feel insignificant.
I'll sign it after.
Okay, well, good. So my question is, can I go to Austin with you?
Second. Can I have a what?
Can I go to Austin with you?
Oh, can you go to Austin with me?
Second.
Yes, of course.
I have a bracelet that has Dr. Seuss on it, my mantra, and I think you should read it to the crowd.
I didn't hear the last part of it. You have a thing on it that says what?
My bracelet.
Your bracelet says
an imprint on it from Dr. Seuss.
Does it really?
Yes, it does.
What's the Dr. Seuss imprint?
Well, I want you to read it to everybody.
Oh, well, all right.
Can you do that?
Yeah. Of course I can. If I can. Oh, you're taking it off. Yes, I'm. Sorry, you guys. I'm 52. Be who you are. Say what you feel. Because those who don't matter, and those who don't.
Okay, you're sucking. You're sucking. Start over. Start over. Start over.
Get off the mic, you whore. Let me read this fucking thing without you all up my ass. Take it downtown for a second, lady. It's my fucking show. Be who you are, say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. There you are. You know, I was gonna sign your CD, but then you gave a review in the middle of my read. I would hold off being Variety until the end of the fucking show if I were you. Variety is a magazine. Thank you. I love Dr. Seuss, and I think that's a very profound statement. Did you have a question, or you wanted to go to Austin with me? No, the Austin thing's off now. Before it was on, but now, since you reviewed me in the middle of your bracelet, you fucking did review shit. You're sucking now. You said the words "you're sucking now." That's a review. That's a value judgment, is what that is. Don't fucking Rick Santorum me and go, "You don't care if black people are helped," and then go, "I didn't say black people. I meant other people that were black." Don't fucking bullshit me. Don't Santorum me.
But she says
you're not going to Austin with me, lady.
What? She says she loves black people.
She what?
She said she loves black people. That's what she told me when I walked.
Oh, you love black people. Good for you. I like them too when they're organized into baseball teams in the 40s. All right. Thank you.
I believe that. I believe that. You're right. I have an all minority baseball team.
You know what I'm saying?
They're very good.
If you guys organized into a ball team, I'd love you. Or a group with matching suits like the Temptations, then I would think you were fucking.
Without the bandana, without the bandana, without the bandana.
Let's do a couple more questions.
Right here? Hold on, right here. She was up first, please.
Who are you? Oh, young lady, thank you for coming over. Sorry, the cord's not very long.
Hi.
Yeah, I know. But I thought we were the yardstick, right? Yes. What's your name, my darling?
Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
First off, I want to say that Roddenberry was a secular humanist.
Who was?
Roddenberry.
Oh, Gene Roddenberry?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Second off, I want to know, who the fuck am I supposed to vote for?
Ah, wow. Well, I mean, you guys got Super Tuesday coming up here, right? And I presume, do only Republicans get to vote in the primary here, or does anybody get to vote? Anybody? Everybody? Well, all I can tell you is, vote your heart. Vote your heart. Think
what
about what everybody.
My heart is a fornicating single woman. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell am I supposed to vote then?
You don't have anyone. Sorry. Santorum, Ron Paul, Romney, and Gingrich are the four horsemen of the fucking apocalypse. Yeah. I mean, Mitt Romney's like Gwyneth Paltrow. He wants to be one of us. But he can't. He's too rich and stiff and weird and game show hosty and Mormony. Gingrich is an unspeakable fucking blowhard. Santorum is misogynistic and homophobic and racist beyond all fucking measure. I mean, it's been insane. And then Ron Paul has a lot of good ideas, but he lives on Uranus. And there's going to be a Federal Reserve and we can't all move to the moon and shit. So I mean, I wouldn't vote if I were you. Not voting's a choice too. I would vote your interests. You're a young, single girl. I would vote your interests, okay? Believe me, white men have no problem voting their interest all the fucking time. So young women need to vote their interests. And if that means protecting your reproductive rights, protecting your freedom, protecting your ability to earn an easy wage that's equal to men's, then I would vote for that. I don't see any of the four Republican guys bringing that to the fucking table. Somehow they want it to be 1554 again or some. They all keep talking about restoring America. America has an articulate fucking African-American president. What are we restoring it to? The days when we didn't have one? I know Tennessee didn't laugh much at that. But I noticed the comics gave me a significant look.
Hey, it was dead on. It was on.
There's restoring and there's restoring, you know what I mean? Let's not restore everything to how it was. Thank you for your question, my precious love. Does that answer it? Is there anyone else? We'll take one more, and then we'll fuck off into the night. This young man over here is waving his...
Right here.
Oh, okay. You have to come over, brother. What about you? Well, come up. You have to come down, Pookie. No, stop making weird single fucking syllable noises. No, me, mom. Fucking come down and be the last person.
My name is...
What's your name, sir?
Rivers, mostly sober.
Ripper?
Rivers.
Rivers?
Correct.
I love it.
So I was at your podcast, or Proopcast rather, in Atlanta, and I didn't get to ask this question, and it's been killing me.
Okay.
I so enjoyed your remembrance of Smokin' Joe Frazier. I would like to talk a little pre-war pugilism. Jack Johnson or Joe Louis?
Oh, well, wow. What do you say? The Mahler and Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson's a singular... You okay? Jack Johnson's a singular figure in American sports. Before he fought in the heavyweight realm and beat Jim Jeffries and then the famous last fight in Havana, or Reno, was it? He used to fight six or seven guys at a time in these giant fucking, like, what we would call now, what do they call those cage matches where all those assholes get in there and have bare feet and fucking...
MMA.
Yeah, he would do those kind of gigs. Jack Johnson wore a gold tooth, had a white girlfriend, and had a special train to take him from when he beat Jeffries in Reno right out of the fucking arena with all the money, because he knew he would be shot if he wasn't afterward. So he was a man of singular fucking courage and determination. Joe Louis is the extraordinary human being. I don't know if you can make a value judgment between them. I think Joe Louis, when he won in the Olympics, and then when he beat Max Schmeling right before the war in World War II, Americans all of a sudden went, black people are athletes too that represent America, because he beat the German guy, right? And that was such a huge, like Jesse Owens in the 36 Olympics, a really big moment for race relations in this fucking country, because Joe Louis and Jesse Owens were the kind of emissaries that we had. Jack Johnson, I don't think, got dealt that. America wasn't fucking ready for it then. And Rick Santorum's not ready for it. But the point is this. Oh, look what I did. Look what I did. I would say they're both magnificent in equal measure. Thank you for your question.
Hi, my name's Oliver.
Hi, Oliver.
Hi.
I loved you on the Partridge Family.
Thank you. You shared a really good Barbados anecdote. I wonder if you had any more to share from your time in LA or on your show and when you're on TV. Just anything that happens behind the scene, a really good anecdote that really describes LA for you.
Oh, LA? Oh, golly. LA, as you know, is a harsh mistress. Well, I'd rather tell you a London story, if that's okay, because it's a funnier one. We were in London doing Whose Line Is It Anyway? And Tony Slattery, who was... And is hilarious a human being. Tony Slattery majored in classics and, oh my God, he's just well overeducated from Cambridge, right? So on the show, if you ever watch the English version, he was quite naughty all the time and did a lot of tap dancing air hostesses and whatnot, the tap dancing pony. Anytime Tony came on, he was the tap dancing whatever. Or he'd go, I'm an Urte Vaz. Right, like he was just hilarious. We're recording the show once in London, and his pants split open, his trouser pants split open, and he wears no underwear whatsoever. And so I saw Christmas and New Year's. Real up close and personal, kind of more than I wanted to. And we cut, and then he went off and his pants were patched up again, but I did see all the equipment during a live taping of Whose Line Is It Anyway? And I dare say you'll never actually see that on any of the DVDs, sadly. There was a chance to see Tony Slattery's equipment in that one. To me, that's my golden moment on Whose Line Is It Anyway? And Tony used to whisper in my ear, we'd be on camera getting ready to start. Clive would be going, Tony and Greg are going to do a bit now. And this one's called Party Quirks or whatever. And Tony would lean into my ear and go, I want to spray my man milk all over your chest. You're lucky I'm kind of high. That's all I have to say. Get out of here, you. Is that the last one, or is that woman who was making weird noises going to ask one? Or is that it? We have another one? One more, and then we'll go. Yes, sir, my friend.
It's Ben.
Hi, Ben. The two of us need look no more.
I thought that was coming. I just wanted to
speak a song. With a friend to call my own. All right, go on.
That might answer my question. I just wanted a song that when it came on, you can't help but sing all the words to.
Wow, that presumes I know all the words to all the songs. There's so fucking many. Oh my God. But I really think I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash. I don't know if you remember that one. Johnny Nash is an American singer. He went to Jamaica. He recorded the song with a Jamaican reggae band. So when you listen to it, it's got a super funky beat and shit. And then there's weird like things in the middle. And that's the one, I Can See Clearly Now. Of course, it's five registers higher than I can sing. So imagine me in my fucking car going, I can see clearly now. Right, it's just horrible. It's really horrible. Really, really horrible. And that one doesn't come on often enough anymore. I tend to hear other awful, well, you know, like Aerosmith songs or classic rock songs from the 70s. If I'm flipping around that channel, like I'll go on satellite radio to the new wave station or whatever. Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels. That's the one that I wanted to be with you alone and talk about the weather. Don't break my heart, don't take my heart, don't blow it away. That's been our Proofcast here from Zanies in Nashville. I want to thank you very much for coming out. I want to thank TC for hanging out. I want to thank Mr. Northern. I want to thank Emily and Gerard for recording and Mr. Nate on sound. This has been the Smartest Man in the World Proofcast. I love you and adore you. Good night.